Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. But just let it be. Na 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me.
And good morning, good morning, good morning. It's your host, Dr. Terry Mason, the show, The Doctor in the House on the Turf, every Sunday right here on AM 1690 WVON. And we've been here for the last over 30 years bringing you this information every Sunday morning. And I'm grateful to have such a wonderful lineup for us today. Today is the first Sunday of the month, and it is the UIC Cancer Center Sunday. And I want to thank Ms. Deidre Reese for making certain that we have a great guest, always great guests, that are here to talk about the different things around cancer. Cancer is a major issue in our community, and lung cancer is among one of those more, unfortunately, popular ones. And with us today, now I'm going to ask, I know how do you say this? Engine? Or how do you say
somebody? Wynn. It's Dr. Ryan Wynn. Yeah, pronounced kind of like W-I-N is how you pronounce it.
Oh, okay.
It. Yeah.
All right. Well, I just thank you, Dr. Wynn. I didn't want to butcher it too badly.
I appreciate you asking.
Oh, no. It's I just want to make sure, because we're going to have a great conversation, because you are a medical oncologist at the university and professor of medicine at the University of Illinois. And just for the benefit of our listeners, can you tell the difference between what's called a medical oncologist versus a surgical oncologist?
Of course. So thank you, Dr. Mason, for having me on. I, as you said, I'm a medical oncologist over at the University of Illinois Cancer Center. My role is really, I think, quarterbacking folks through their cancer diagnosis. And so a lot of what I do is managing folks who need chemotherapy, who need some of our new treatments that we have for cancer, anything that any pills that folks are taking or any IV medications that they take for their cancer. That's my big role. Whereas we do have a really great team of radiation and surgeon oncologists who also play a role as well.
So this seems like a team approach to a cancer based on how does one determine what one needs in terms of the different participants of your team with regard to the care of their cancer?
Yeah, you bring up a great point. You know, cancer is such a complex issue that it really does require a team approach. And here at UI Health, something that we do with every patient who's newly diagnosed with lung cancer is that we have a meeting every week with every member of our team. And so every patient gets that whole team approach right from the start. We all come together and we all discuss what's the best kind of steps for this patient. And then so when folks are coming to see me, typically by the time they've seen me, I've already reviewed their case with our entire team so that I can go over who are the next people that you need to see. And typically we can get folks to see myself, the radiation doctor, or a surgeon, you know, typically within a week or two, so that they can get the opinion from everybody.
Well, this is really good. And I'm going to be asking some other questions around other things like complementary therapy and what we do in terms of food and things of that nature, because these are also very important. And then with some of the social issues that you may uncover as people are going through this and maybe their inability to go to work. You're listening to this show right over, and those that don't know, you can go online. You can go to the Facebook page and also watch and listen at the same time. So it's really important that you do that. So tell us a little bit more about who this team is and how do you manage beyond just the doctors to make certain that that person has a complete team in terms of managing their cancer, including their psychological issues they may have with it.
Of course, and that's such a great point. You know, a lot of folks think when they go to the hospital, it's just the doctors who are taking care of them. But I can tell you that every member of our team is very important, from the nurse navigators that we have who really kind of champion patients throughout the process with all the different logistics that need to be set up. We've got great nutritionists who talk to folks about what the different foods that they can eat and how they can try to either keep up their weight or what's the healthiest foods that they can eat while they're on treatment. We've got a great team of social workers. We got even folks as part of our, what we call our clinical trial office, so that patients know that they have access to the newest and most promising new treatments as well. And so we've got this really, I think, 360 comprehensive team of folks. And so when patients come to see me, they're not just seeing me, they're seeing our whole team. And often they can see multiple members of those team on the same day, actually.
There are, I'm sure, some very scary moments for patients after they hear that C word. And what do you do to help them just sort of psychologically manage that event when they hear the C word?
Yeah, the C word, you know, I see a lot of patients after they've already been told that they have cancer. And so when they're coming to me, it's typically one of the most anxious and most kind of anxiety ridden days of their lives. And so something that I always try to do is sit down with folks, listen to what their biggest concerns are. And I think a lot of that anxiety and that scary feeling comes from not knowing what's next. And so what I try to do with folks is tell them, here's what the big picture looks like. And then here's what these just next 1 to 2 weeks are going to look like for you. And I find that once people know that there's a step and that there's a plan, that helps people feel a lot better about what the next steps are. Because I think the challenging part is when you hear that C word, there's so many different questions in your mind. There's so many different thoughts on what's next. And I think that uncertainty is very anxiety driven. It would be for me. And so what I really try to do with folks when I meet them is tell them, here's what our plan's going to be, and here's what we can focus on in this next week or two.
Because people hear the C word, and the next thing they think of is the D word, dying. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes they may have had an experience with a family member, a friend, or what have you, that was not necessarily so pleasant in terms of how that all works. But before we get to that, I'd like to make sure that we do our job here this morning to let people know about some of those common cancers, like the ones I'm sure, like lung and what have you. What can they do to help prevent themselves from getting it? Because that's the real key, is the work at the prevention stage. Can we just talk a bit about that?
Correct. Yeah. So, you know, it's much easier, I think, to prevent cancer than to try to treat it once, especially it's gone to those later stages. The number one risk factor that we know for lung cancer is cigarette smoking. And so the biggest thing that folks can do to try to decrease their risk of getting lung cancer is to quit smoking. That's quite a process, and we can talk a little bit more about that. But I'd say in terms of what's the number one thing people can do, I think that's the biggest thing, is quitting smoking. You know, there's also other risk factors associated with lung cancer. You know, I think being exposed to secondhand smoke is also a risk factor. Some folks have who live in more highly polluted areas, that can be a risk factor. And then obviously, you know, those folks who have cancer that runs in their family, I think it's always worth talking to your doctor about whether or not you should get checked out and tested early as well.
What are the things that can be done early? I guess the earliest thing is really to get people the help to stop the one thing that's creating the problem for them. Mm-hmm. What do you offer people for that?
Yeah, so for those folks who are smoking, for example, there are a number of great medications that are available. One of the best things that people can do is talking with their doctor about what medications are available to try to cut back on smoking. With a lot of my patients, I use a combination of a nicotine patch as well as nicotine gum so that they're getting some level control as well as the gum that can help cut back on some of those cravings. Now, it is a process though, and so I can tell you, I take care of a lot of folks who have lung cancer, and to get someone to change a habit that they've done for 30, 40 years overnight, I don't expect anyone to do that cold turkey. And so it's a process, and we walk them through that process.
The one thing I'd also like you to deal with is that we have bombarded, probably wrongly so, and I'm a former urologist, retired urologist, with this whole notion of symptoms. And so people are very, well, I don't have any symptoms. I don't have this. I don't have, you know, coughing up blood. I'm not doing this. I'm doing that. So I must be okay. Can you just begin to let people know what those real, before those symptoms become present, there's some damage that's being done that you may not be able to see. Let's discuss that a bit.
Yeah. And so right now we're starting to see a big increase in the number of what we call lung cancer screening scans going on. And so at UI Health, we've got a really great lung cancer screening program. And so we've been doing these CT scans or taking pictures of people's chests to try to check and find these lung cancers before they become bigger issues. Because a lot of times when there's these small little spots in your chest, they're not causing you to cough up blood. They're not causing you to lose weight. However, by the time it does cause all of those symptoms, it's much harder to treat. And so when we can find these cancers when they're much smaller, we can either do surgery, radiation, or other treatments and try to just nip it in the bud and cure folks of their cancer, which is often not a word that we hear a lot with lung cancer. And so I think that's one big benefit of getting screened early before the symptoms come.
I think that this is a critical conversation right here because we have been so symptom taught and driven that, well, if I feel okay, I must be okay. And nothing could be absolutely further from the truth. So there are what you're saying, and I'd like you to, and I know you just said it, but there can be problems going on and you don't have any symptoms at all. So the things that's most important is to look at what are your behaviors. Would you say that's true?
Correct. Yes, absolutely. So those folks who are above between 50 to 80 years old, and if you've smoked for longer than 20 years, you do qualify for what we call a lung cancer screening scan. And this can be without any symptoms whatsoever. And I can tell you with the number of increase in the lung cancer screening scans that we're having, I'm seeing a lot of patients who come to my clinic and they tell me, I feel totally fine. I have no shortness of breath. I haven't lost any weight. I wouldn't even know or believe that I have cancer until you showed me that this showed up on the screen. And it's much, much easier to treat those cancers when they're smaller and not causing symptoms than to treat it with by the time it's spread all throughout the body. And so it's so important, I think, if you have high or a high risk individual to get screened because it's so much easier to treat at an earlier stage than by the time it causes all those symptoms.
Now, this whole idea, if I feel okay, I must be okay, is something that we have to fight in almost every cancer area, every heart attack, stroke area, and all those sort of things. Because what I think people don't understand, there's a lot of damage being done before there's enough damage to create a symptom. Talk a bit about that for us, please.
Correct. Yeah. And this applies, like you said, to all types of diseases, right? I think for cancer, these cancer cells are already starting to grow in your body. And it by the time that it's caused symptoms, it's already grown so big or it's grown all throughout the body that it's so challenging to treat by that point. And so it's very tough to treat folks once they have symptoms, but it's so much easier, I think, to treat it when it's not causing symptoms. And it, you know, I think with, you can see that with heart disease, you can see that with lung disease, you can see that with cancer. All these things could be causing issues that you're just not seeing or not even feeling. And so I think to wait until it causes the issue sometimes can be problematic because it can be so much harder to treat at that point.
Yeah, I think that we have, and I think the medical profession has driven some of that because a long time ago, those of us that are older, remember the 7 warning signs of this or the symptoms of this or the symptoms of that. And that really, I think, did a disservice to the community that the first symptom that you may have a problem is when you pick up a cigarette. when you pick up a cigarette, that may be the earliest sign that you may have a problem. Because if you keep picking that cigarette up, you will have a problem. Mm-hmm. Can we talk about how much time usually in advance? Because people say, well, I've been smoking for this and smoking for that and doesn't seem to bother me, as well as some of the other things that smoking does.
Yeah, so we know that cigarette smoking is, you know, one of the kind of most challenging things you can do with your health. It causes a lot of inflammation. It can cause heart disease, can cause strokes, high blood pressure, and then not just lung cancer, but it can cause a wide variety of different cancers as well. So bladder cancer, all these other types of cancers can be kind of associated or worsened by smoking. And so just like you were saying, as soon as someone, we know that, you know, the longer that someone smokes and the more cigarettes that they smoke, essentially, I think of every cigarette as increasing that risk of cancer, of heart disease, of lung disease. And so I think it's never too late to stop smoking. And I can tell you, even folks who see me who have a lung cancer diagnosis, I still tell them to stop smoking, because the studies do show that those folks who have cancer and they stop smoking, they actually live longer than those folks who keep smoking. And so some people will tell me, what's the point? I already have cancer. And I actually say, you know, at any stage, cutting back on smoking can actually benefit your health.
We've got a couple of callers, and the number to call is 773-591-1690. That's 773-591-1690. Caller, you're on the air with your question. Go right ahead.
Hi. Hello, Dr. Mason, and to your guests as well. And I appreciate the very informative platform you guys are speaking from today. I guess my question has in part been answered in regards to prevention versus cure, but I, as a person who would like to take part in a screening, a cancer screening, if you will, so that I could be on the prevention part of it, don't know how to go about asking that of my just general practice doctor who I go see annually. And it's like, you know, are these screenings very expensive? And I think that has a lot to do with the actual person not being able to, in fact, go get that prevention, if you will, is because that there aren't programs around that are inexpensive, and that, you know, the screenings, and that, if they are, I don't know. And I'm sure a lot of people are like me, but I'm mainly concerned with myself in my older years. And I guess another question I would have is, can cancer lay dormant if you've been exposed to certain elements of a cancer-causing agent, if you will, years and years ago? And what is the dormancy like? Is that something like a mold just sitting and all of a sudden it starts to spread? Is that the point when doctors start to get curious as far as, okay, what is the best approach that we could take to actually take care of this? But I guess my bigger question is, those screening options, is that something that's economical, and or is that something, where? How do you go about saying, hey, I want to get a cancer screening? It's not like I want to.
All right,
to
well, let him answer it. Let him answer it, sure, because I think he'll answer it for you right now. Go right ahead, doctor.
Well, thanks for the great question. So you bring up a great point with lung cancer screening in particular. So those folks who are high risk, like I said, so if you're between the ages of 50 to 80 and you've smoked for over 20 years, it's actually mandated by Medicare, Medicaid, and most commercial insurances to pay for that lung cancer screening. And so if you connect either, you can either ask your primary care doctor to place the order, or you can connect with us at UI Health. And I can give the number now. It's 312-996-2180. And I can say that again later in the show for our folks here. But if you connect with us at at UI Health, we can always connect you to see if you qualify for those lung cancer screening tests as well. But most of these commercial insurances, Medicare, Medicaid, they should all cover it as it's mandated now.
Thank you, Carl. That was a great question. And doctor, could you give that number again right now, please?
Of course. That number is 312-996-2180.
Now, is that only, if people had questions, wanted to try and schedule something today, is that something that's available, that number is answered every day, or is that just during the week?
I believe it's mostly during the week. I think during the weekends, it'll go to a voicemail. But if you do give that call, somebody should give you a call back.
All right. We're going to go to our next caller. Go ahead. Go right ahead, caller. You're on the air. Go right ahead.
Yeah. So I want to thank you for taking my call. And I appreciate all this super good information. Everything you said, I'm right on with it, as well as the questions like that the other caller had. There's a question I want to ask. After smoking or quitting smoking is number one and so on, I've heard that sleep and your diet can greatly affect your state of health to fight cancer. And I want to know, what's your opinion about that?
Yeah, those are great questions. So we know that stress in particular, as it kind of relates to sleep as well, can be a big driver in cancer as well. And so that's something that we actually study here at UI Health, is how does stress and, you know, the impact of stress on the lack of sleep cause impact cancer. I think a lot of that data or that research is still to be done, but it is something that we're looking into. And then we do know, in terms of diet and food, obesity is actually one of the other big risk factor for cancer, not just for lung cancer, but for breast cancer, prostate cancer, some of these other cancers as well. And so that's something that we, you know, we have a really great nutrition team here at UI Health that can kind of talk with folks about what's the best nutrition and diet plan for them.
That's a great question. Very good question. How badly, if say you don't smoke, but you live with people who do, so you're getting secondhand smoke, what do you do and how do you counsel people to help navigate that situation?
Yeah, so being, you know, living in a household where you're exposed to secondhand smoke does increase your risk of lung cancer. And so I see it every once in a while, folks who have never smoked a day in their life, but they live with someone who smoked for a long time. And unfortunately, some of those folks can get lung cancer. And so the education I always give people about when I'm talking about lung cancer, you know, trying to cut back on smoking, is that this isn't just for your health, but it's for your family's health as well. And so all the folks that live around you are affected. And even if you go outside to smoke and you're not smoking inside the house, just being around that environment does increase your risk. And so I think about it not just as supporting your health, but you do have to look out for your family and the people who live with you as well.
We've got a couple more callers that have called in. Caller, you're on the air. Go right ahead with your question.
Hello.
Go right ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go right ahead.
Okay. I have a question. And what I'm finding is that when I qualify my clients for insurance, that a lot of them are smoking marijuana. And they're smoking it every day. So evidently it is addictive, whether people know it or not. But can the same, when they're inhaling that, I guess it's going to your lungs, just like cigarettes. Can that be the cause of lung cancer also? Or has any research been done with that?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So we have a lot more research on cigarette smoke being associated with lung cancer. I think the research on marijuana and cancer just isn't as robust as it is with cigarette smoke. But we do know that any time that anyone's smoking anything, you're taking in smoke, you're taking in all those different chemicals, it has been shown to have kind of worsening lung health. I think we are starting to see some data now that any type of combustible or inhaled smoke can be associated with an increase in lung cancer. And so I don't think that data is as strong as cigarette smoke right now, but I strongly advise any of my patients to try to avoid any type of smoke inhalation, regardless if it's cigarettes or marijuana.
Okay, thank you. That's what I thought. Okay, thank you very much.
You're so welcome. Next caller, go right ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Is there the doctor's opinion about herbs? Could you speak on that?
Herbs for what now, sir?
Herbs to cure cancer.
To cure cancer, all right.
Mm. So, you know, I think I will say a lot of our medications that we have actually come from different herbs or different plants, but they've just been refined and gone through that pharmaceutical process. there are some great resources online. So when folks come to see me, they'll bring a lot of times bottles or different supplements that they've been taking. And what we'll do is we'll sit down, you know, there's the word herb encompasses so many different types of herbs and supplements. And so what I really try to do is sit down and go over each of them and make sure it's not interfering with any medications that they're on, and kind of see what the research and data is on it. But it's a very individualized approach we take to any of those herbs.
That's a great question. Doctor, is there, if people are seeing other physicians in other places, is it possible for them, and I'm sure they have to work that through their insurance or what have you, for them to see you, even if they're not your current patient?
Yes. You know, at UIC Cancer Center, you know, we're always happy to see folks for a second opinion. I see a lot of times folks who have another cancer doctor that they're seeing, and then I'll just chat with their doctor and we can try to come up with what's the best treatment plan. And I always encourage my patients, if you want to go see somebody else for a second opinion, this is your health, this is your life, I would do the same thing. So I don't take it personally if someone wants to see another physician. I can give folks the number that they can call to try to schedule a visit for me. So that number is 312-355-1625. Again, that's 312-355-1625. And again, my name is Dr. Ryan Nguyen. My last name is spelled N-G-U-Y-E-N.
Dr. Nguyen, the other issue, the other number that you gave, the 2180 number, what number is that? Where does that go? The 996-2180, where does that go?
So that goes to our lung cancer screening program. And so that's for folks who are worried that they are high risk for lung cancer and they can get one of these lung cancer screening tests. And so those folks will connect you with a CT scan of your chest, which is a test to look if you have a lung cancer. And then the number I just gave is the one to, if you do have a diagnosis of lung cancer, I also see patients who have any type of skin cancers as well. And so that's the number to connect with me to see me in clinic as well.
Now, people who want to come and see you, how does that work with their insurance? Must they get a referral or how does that work?
In general, it does require a referral because I am a specialist and it kind of depends on your insurance. But most folks, the way that they'll end up seeing me is that they get a referral either from their primary care physician who's within the UI health system. But I do see quite a number of folks who get their referrals from their primary care physician outside of UIC. They'll send the referral over to UI Health and they can connect with me there.
All right. Do we have any other callers? We'll go ahead and take those callers right now. Go right ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, is that me, Dr. Mason?
Yes, sir. Hey, what's up, Brother Mansong? How you feeling?
Hey, I'm still standing, man, you know, got my little challenges too. But listen, in terms of supplements, you know, I would like to ask your guests, like olive leaf extract, they say that's a free radical scavenger. Does that help with killing things that cause cancer?
You were saying aloe extract?
Olive leaf extract.
You know, that's a great question. A lot of the times we don't get, you know, I'll be completely frank, as medical professionals, we don't get great training in all the different types of herbal supplements. And that's where I really fall back on some of the online resources that we have, just going over and seeing if those have any interactions with medications you're on and what kind of cancer properties that they have. But I will say that we are testing, you know, a lot of new different types of treatments through the UIC Cancer Center. So I'm happy to have that discussion with any folks when they come see me.
Now, it was another thing. Can you take supplements like vitamin C, vitamin D, and several supplements all together at once? Does that hurt your stomach or something, or with all them mixing at the same time? I've seen people, you know, swallow 5 and 6 different, you know, supplements, you know, with while they're eating, you know.
Yeah. You know, I've got a couple of different patients who have a few different vitamin deficiencies, and so they are taking a few different vitamins at the same time. I'd say that's a very personal question, though. That's a discussion between you and your doctor, just because you do have to check and make sure that the vitamins aren't interacting with each other and they're not interacting with some of the medications that you're on. So I'd say that's a very personalized question, and I don't want to lead any one person astray without having full information over their full medical history.
Okay. And one last question for you, Dr. Mason. Do you have any knowledge of what killed Dr. Layla Africa and Dr. Sabi? You know, there's rumors about they were killed with Dr. Sabi, especially because he had a cure for cancer.
No, sir, I do not.
Oh, okay. All right, y'all keep on pushing. Appreciate y'all.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I will say that there are, you know, one of the things I want folks in the supplement community to understand, because we have a lot of that, the key is to not get the disease in the first place.
Go ahead.
So if you can avoid the smoking in the first place, if you can avoid the eating all the fresh fried foods and all those things in the first place, don't think that any herb from anybody is going to erase that bad habit. So we need to make sure that we've done what we need to do by doing what we know works, and that is by eating the kinds of things that provide the kinds of vitamins and antioxidants that naturally help us. And those are all things with color. We're going to be talking a lot more about this as time goes along. Let's go on and see if there's another caller. Caller, you're there. You're on the air. Go right ahead.
My name is Chris, and I had a chest x-ray within the last 2 years, and this didn't indicate any cancer. Is that the same quality as the x-ray that the doctor was talking about?
Yeah, Chris, so you bring up really a fantastic question here. And so the short answer is no, a chest x-ray is not as good of a quality scan for lung cancer as what we call a CT scan of your chest. The chest x-ray is a very quick picture that can look at maybe if you've got a big cancer, we can catch it. But it's not really good at finding those very small cancers. And so that's why a lung cancer screening specific CT scan is what we recommend, because it gets a much better quality. The way I think about it is a chest x-ray is probably one of those pictures that you get on like a flip phone from maybe 10 years ago, whereas these CT scans are like the new iPhone picture quality that you can see. And so you can just get, I think, a much better quality and find these small spots compared to the chest x-ray.
That's a great question, and I'm glad he asked it. We have another more callers. Go right ahead, caller, with your question.
You got me, Doc?
Yes, sir. Go right ahead. I got you.
I want to ask our illustrious guest, is there any progress on these abnormal costs in the healthcare field? And if there's any end in sight to this health terrorism?
Now, you might want to explain what you mean when you say health terrorism. So we know exactly what you're talking about.
Well, the costs are so high, you might have some health card. Then they tell you it don't cover this. And this year going to be $70,000, $80,000. Then they want you to put your house up. They want you to sign these papers. You'll be on these people till you die. I mean, it's not like Canada, Norway, Sweden. These people want to take everything you got for health care. Is there any end in sight?
Well, I can tell you there's a lot of things going on out there that are not scrupulous. And I think if you have insurance of some sort, before you guarantee to do anything like that, I would check with the people with whom I have insurance first, because you know, putting those kinds of things up sounds a bit severe to me.
I feel you on that, Doc. But when you go through that, there's nowhere to run. There's nowhere to hide. They're going to tell you not for that. Where are you going?
Well, I think if you're in a situation where you don't have the means, there are places that you can go. You can always start at one of the federally qualified health centers, because that's one of the places you can go and get started with a number of things. And I would, if it's a cancer thing, at the University of Illinois Cancer Center and what have you have always been very open to doing these things. And maybe Dr. Nguyen can talk a bit more about those kinds of things, because I do not believe, and maybe Dr. Nguyen can speak to it, that I've never heard of anybody doing that at the University of Illinois. Dr. Nguyen?
Yeah, you know, I think the caller brings up a lot of frustrations that a lot of folks in the and patients are feeling from the healthcare system, right? It's a very expensive system. And so I think something that we do at UI Health that we really try to screen with folks is we've got a really great social work team. We kind of go over, because as you know, getting a cancer diagnosis, you're going to be seeing the doctor a lot. You're going to be getting a lot of different medications. And so this can be, for folks, a big financial event for them. And so we really try to make sure that our social workers and our entire team is cognizant of any financial burdens that a patient might have. And I work with a lot of different folks who've got financial constraints. You know, they've got to take time off from work to get treatment. And so these are things that I talk with patients about all the time. And we try to find ways, either through our medication assistance programs, or social work programs, to connect people with resources so that they can have the resources they need to get through their diagnosis.
And we're going to be talking more about Medicare Part C for those for folks, too. Because Medicare Part C offers some financial relief. And I'll be talking about that more next week on the show. We're going to spend some time talking about Medicare Part C. You hear a lot about it, but there are things, particularly for those people who are Medicare age, that should prevent them from ending up in any kind of situation like that. Let's go on to our next caller. Go right ahead, caller. And thank you so much for that call. I really appreciate that. Go right ahead, caller.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to ask, like I know a person that had triple bypass surgery done, but they're still smoking cigarettes. You know, what are their chances of, you know, but they didn't find any cancer in their system. And, you know, what are the chances probably of, you know, this person might developing cancer later on?
Well, first of all, let me just say that the triple bypass surgery already says that he has some problems. I mean, okay. Some significant problems. They may not be necessarily manifest in the lung, but if he's at triple bypass, that means the arteries are significantly blocked to the point that they had to do the surgery. That being said, if they're smoking, they ought to quit. And if they can't and they need help to quit, I'm going to toss that over to Dr. Nguyen. Dr. Nguyen, go right ahead.
Yeah, you know, just like Dr. Mason was saying, this person has got pretty significant heart disease. And I can tell you, you know, I'm not a cardiologist, but I've had a family member recently who also had bypass surgery. And I can tell you that the cardiologist, if they heard that this person, anybody who had bypass is smoking, they would be so concerned because, you know, you just got a new lease, basically a new lease on life. And now with any smoking, you're just increasing the chances of those arteries being blocked again. And so, you know, I've met a lot of patients who smoke quite a bit, and not everyone who smokes get cancer, but a lot of them do end up getting heart disease and lung disease. And so that's why I think it's important to think about quitting smoking doesn't just decrease your risk of cancer. It decreases your risk of all these different health issues. And so we've got a great team here at UIC that can connect with different tobacco cessation education and programs.
Okay. Thank you, doctor.
You're so welcome. Thank you. We'll go ahead with our next caller. Caller, you're on the air. Go right ahead. Caller, you're on the air. Go right ahead. All right. Well, we are still taking calls. People who have questions, these have been some great. I want people to know I really appreciate that there are these. There's no bad questions. And we want you to ask any question that you want to ask now that we have right on the show right now the experts who can help you answer this. But one of the things that I do want us to go back to, this whole notion that cigarette smoking isn't just prevention of cigarette smoking. It's not just about stopping the getting lung cancer. You just heard the person talking about the bypass surgery. Well, cigarette smoking aggravates that. Cigarette smoking aggravates and if you got blood vessel disease anywhere in your body, you got it everywhere in your body. So it's not only just affecting the blood vessels in your leg, but it's in your heart. It's also affecting the ones in your brain. It's affecting all of those blood vessels. You just don't get a problem in one part of the blood vessel tree and don't have it someplace else. That does not exist. If you got it anywhere, you got it everywhere. And it's just a matter of how bad it is as to in terms of what symptoms. You got to remember, you got to block that artery significantly to start getting symptoms. So just as you don't have symptoms, doesn't mean a thing. Dr. Nguyen, you had want to make a point?
Yeah, it's the same thing like we were saying with lung cancer, right? Just because you're not having symptoms doesn't mean that the lung cancer isn't there. And so a lot of this heart disease can start without you feeling anything. And it's not to the point that it becomes an issue where you're having symptoms. And that's where that's the point where you need to get triple bypass surgery or some of these other big things. So it is so important if you are doing high risk behaviors like smoking cigarettes to get screened, you know, number one, to quit smoking, and then number two, to get screened for things like cancer or heart disease.
And I would say this is just because you have triple bypass surgery, you're not cured of anything. All they've done is mechanically create a bypass around what's blocked, but that hasn't cured anything. You need to understand that if you don't stop the things that cause that, it's going to it'll come right back and reblock the arteries that have been operated on, or arteries that haven't been operated on. And we've got to understand that we have, when we deal with these things don't go away. And the surgery doesn't make anything go away. It just temporizes it so that you can function better than you did before the surgery. We want to go ahead. Do I have another caller? Let's go ahead. Or is that all the callers we have right now? And if so, Dr. Nguyen, there are so many things that smoking does. And if we could just go through this list of, you know, what's in the nicotine, what's causing it to cause the cancer. Can we just talk about just how that works, how that cascade of biochemical events happen?
Yeah, so, you know, nicotine is one of, if not the most addictive substances that we've ever studied. And so I know that, you know, that combination of nicotine, it goes into that kind of dopamine pathway in our brains, and you just get this idea of like reward stimulation. And so it's just created in these people's minds this addiction where they feel like they constantly need to be going back to it. And then on the other side, you know, in addition to the nicotine, you also get all the chemicals and all the combustible products that are in the cigarette when you're smoking. And so you get this combination of this constant reward pathway in your brain on top of all of this smoke and chemical exposure into your lungs. And it's really just the accumulation of getting smoke exposure over a lifetime. You're weakening your immune system. You're causing the cells in your lungs to break down. And eventually, when you have that happen again and again and again, that's what leads to cancer.
Yeah, this is that's so important for people to understand. And I think that one of the things, and I've always said it when I was in practice, one of the things that the medical profession did was a disservice by giving people these 10 symptoms or these 10 warning signs. And that's the absolute wrong way to think about a disease, because there's not one disease and there's not one cancer that you have, for the most part, that produces a symptom in its earliest, most potentially curable form. Say that again. There's not one cancer, there's not a blockage in your artery or anything like that, that produces a symptom in its earliest form. Let's go back to the phones. You're on the caller. We have caller. Go right ahead.
Yes, I'd like to know, has there been any a fight in the legislative level to actually end cigarettes?
Could you repeat the first part of that question again?
Okay, so is there a fight going on to actually rid us of cigarettes, because kids are smoking them? You got adults who are chronically ill as a result of it, and all the package says is that cigarettes, quote unquote, may be hazardous to your health. So what's being done on the legislative level to fight ridding us of cigarettes, and also speak on what nicotine does? Thank you, and I'll hang up.
Thank you. Go right ahead, Dr. Nguyen.
So you bring up something that I've actually spent a lot of time studying and thinking about, right, is we can talk to folks about quitting smoking at the individual level, but what can we do upstream to try to affect a bigger number of people's health? And so I'll tell you that I actually grew up in California, and then I moved to the Midwest, where I did part of my training in Indiana before coming to Chicago. And when I moved, I realized that a lot of folks in Indiana smoke quite a bit more than people in California. And I was trying to figure out why that was. And something that I found out, you know, when doing this research, is that the price of a pack of cigarettes is actually a big driver in whether or not people are smoking or not. And what I saw was that in California, and then we know that in Illinois and Chicago, the average price of a pack of cigarettes is closer to $10 or so. Whereas in Indiana, it's closer to like $6. Big part of that is because there's big differences in the state tobacco taxes. And so what I actually did in Indiana when I was there was shown that when you increase the price of a pack of cigarettes, it actually decreases the rate of people getting and dying from lung cancer. And so that's something that we work with a lot of our cancer advocacy groups to try to work with politicians and let them know this is one of the biggest things that you can do to try to impact people's health, is to actually increase the price of a pack of cigarettes. Other things that they can do is increase the smoking age, try to limit the amount of places that people can smoke at. And so these are all things that we're trying to do at a policy level. You know, cigarettes have such a long history and complicated history in America. And so will we ever be able to ban them outright? I'm not sure if that's something that will realistically happen. But I do know that there are a number of measures we're doing at the legislative level to try to decrease the amount of people smoking cigarettes.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough sell. And I know all we can do is keep putting out information, because you got to remember the tobacco lobbies are very strong.
Very, very strong.
And back in the early days, they had doctors smoking cigarettes and dentists smoking cigarettes doing commercials for the tobacco companies. So that's a whole nother topic. Let's see if we got one more caller. Caller, you're on the air. Go right ahead. Caller, if you're there. Well, what I'd like to do, too, is go back to this point about the lobbies. And, you know, the tobacco lobbies give a lot of money to politicians. And that really creates problems for any kind of legislation. And then people will start screaming about, oh, you're taking away my right to smoke and so on and so forth. I mean, all these other things would begin to surface. But I tell you, cigarette smoking, there's nothing good about cigarette smoking other than it makes money for the tobacco industry. And it also is a tax, to your point, Dr. Wynn, it also is a tax revenue opportunity for municipalities. But it is, you know, even though I thought when I was growing up, a pack of cigarettes was like 27 cents. And when it went up to 35 cents, everybody says, oh, I'm going to stop smoking. Then when it went up to 40 cents, it was going, oh, I'm not going to smoke. 50 cents, 60 cents, a dollar. And now cigarettes are $10 a pack. And people still smoke, and I don't blame them, because the cigarettes themselves, and Dr. Wynn, I'm going to give you the last moments to talk about the addictive nature of cigarette smoking. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, and you hit it the nail right on the head. The tobacco lobbies have been around for a very long time, and it's not like they've gone away. They're still paying politicians now. So it's not like this thing that only existed 20, 30 years ago. And it's been, you know, it's a multi-billion dollar industry, and they've specifically engineered cigarettes to be as addictive as possible. Even the ones that are, for example, like that had filters, you know, they engineered in a way that people would then end up sucking them harder, so they get more smoke exposure. And so there's been all these different things that they've done. They've invested millions, if not billions of dollars into making cigarettes as addictive as possible. And so that's why, you know, I really try not to have any stigma around any of my patients who smoke or any of my patients who have lung cancer. No one deserves to have cancer. Patients who smoke still deserve to have the best healthcare possible. It's a multi, you know, I don't blame anybody for that, because there's been the media that's been involved in that, as well as the addictive nature. And so, I want people to know that, you know, us doctors and us specifically here at UIC Cancer Center, we're here to help support people through their journey, whether that's stopping smoking, getting screened for lung cancer, or if you have a lung cancer diagnosis, we've got a great team here. We're going to treat you without any judgment, without any stigma, and we're here to just help you and your health.
You know, thank you. That is so, so very important. And we do need to understand that. And I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be on this program this morning. And of course, we'll look forward to you coming back. But you got to remember, the tobacco industry knew 50 years before they were forced to admit it that it caused lung cancer. They knew 50 years before they were forced to admit it. So there's very powerful lobbies. And, you know, all I can tell you is if you want to do something about it, follow the money. Follow the money, because that'll tell you where you need to go. Follow the money. And Dr. Nguyen, I'm going to give the last couple minutes of the show to you if you want to make any closing comments to any of the, and make sure you repeat the number. People can call at least three times.
Of course. So thank you again, Dr. Mason, for having me on and for the audience for listening here. Like I said, I'm a lung cancer doctor. I also see patients who have skin cancer over at the UIC Cancer Center. Couple things I do want to make, if you want a second opinion or if you just want an appointment to discuss any things with me, you can always call my clinic to schedule an appointment. That number is 312-355-1625. Again, that's 312-355-1625. I'll repeat it one more time. 312-355-1625. You can also look on the UI Health website, and if you Google or you look for my name, you'll be able to find my profile, and you can click on links to schedule an appointment with me as well. I do want to make one last point that, you know, lung cancer screening saves lives. And here at the UIC Cancer Center, we've really increased the number of lung cancer screening tests that we've done. I can tell you that when I started medical school over 10 years ago, pretty much everybody who was diagnosed with lung cancer had stage 4, the most advanced type of lung cancer. And with these lung cancer screening, we're finding all these new earlier stages of lung cancer, and it's so much easier to treat. And a lot of these patients, like you're saying, they don't have any symptoms whatsoever. They have no cough, no weight loss, they have no pain, and so they can't even believe that they have lung cancer. But typically, if we had gone back a couple of years, I wouldn't see these patients till it's too late. And so I really want to stress the importance. We have so many great new treatments, especially for early stage lung cancer. It's so important to get screened. And so again, if you're 50 to 80 years old and you've smoked for over 20 years, I want you to talk with us or talk with your doctor about getting a lung cancer screening test. And if you want to connect with us at UI Cancer Center for lung cancer screening, I'll give you the number. It's 312-996-2180. I'll repeat it twice. That's 312-996-2180. One more time. 312-996-2180. And that's to connect again with the lung cancer screening program. It can save your life if we can catch these things early. So it's very important to get screened.
Dr. Nguyen, this has been great. I want to thank Ms. Reese for getting organizing all this. This is a wonderful, wonderful show. I think you did a great job putting out the information. Now that, you know, the information is out there, so it's only as it only helps if you use it. So I'm going to ask all the listeners, use the number. Pass it on to people in your family, your friends, even people you don't like. Pass it on to them, too. So I want to thank you so much again for being with us today. And we'll be back next week at the same time and station. We're going to be talking more about Zing Health and what it can do to help with some of these problems. But until next week, at the same time and station, may God continue to bless each and every one of you with continued health and strength as I leave you now in peace.
Thank you, Dr. Mason.
As I ponder my existence, what's my purpose for residing with this?